Welcome to the Built On Air Podcast, the variety show for all things Airtable. In each episode, we cover four different segments. It's always fresh and different and lots of fun while you get the insider info on all things Airtable. Our hosts and guests are some of the most senior experts in the Airtable community. Join us live each week on our YouTube channel every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern and join our active community at builtonair.com. Before we begin, a word from our sponsor, Onto Air Backups. Onto Air Backups provides automated Airtable backups to your cloud storage for secure and reliable data protection. Prevent data loss and set up a secure Airtable backup system with Onto Air Backups at ontoair.com. As one customer, Sarah, said, having automated Airtable backups has freed up hours of my time every other week and the fear of losing anything. Longtime customer David states, Onto Air Backups might be the most critical piece of the puzzle to guard against unforeseeable disaster. It's easy to set up, and it just works. Join Sarah, David, and hundreds more Airtable users like you to protect your Airtable data with Onto Air Backups. Sign up today with promo code BuiltOnAir for a 10% discount. Check them out at OntoAir.com. And now, let's check out today's episode and see what we built on air.
Welcome back to the Built On Air podcast. Welcome. We're back now into season 18. That's crazy. We are going on season 18. This is episode one after a month off. It's good to be back with everybody. Camille, Allie, good to see you again.
Yay.
Hello.
We have a special guest with us, Jimmy. Welcome, Jimmy.
How's it going?
Nice to have you with us. We'll learn more about Jimmy and his story later in the show. But for now, walk us through what we're going to be talking about today. We always do an hour-long show, keeping you up to date on everything Airtable. We start with our round the bases. There's a lot to talk about since we've been off for the month of March. Lots of announcements that we'll be discussing. Then a shout-out to our sponsor, Onto Air. Then we'll learn about Jimmy, what he's got going on in his world. And then he's going to showcase his marketplace that his company has built. And then shout out to join our community. And then finally, Camille is going to walk us through some new functionality of dynamic filtering. Okay, let's see. We've got a lot going on here. Let's start with one of the big announcements. Airtable AI finally rolled out of beta and now available to everyone. This is a paid product. It's an add-on, so it's, I believe, $6 per user per month, and it's kind of, you have to get it for all your users, right? It's kind of like an all or nothing. Yeah. And then that gives you a certain bucket of credits per user that those credits can be used across the account. I don't believe it's per user. So it's kind of a weird way of how they calculate it, but then if you need more, you can purchase more. Mm-hmm. So how much are you guys diving into Airtable AI?
Not at all. I haven't. Nope.
Yeah. Jimmy, you playing with this yet?
I haven't yet. I would like to though, because I could imagine some use cases, but no, I haven't dived in yet.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been using it. It's interesting. Our agency in Air Studio, we talk to our clients about it. We only have like one or two that are actually like embracing it. Most clients are not ready for it. There's some legal questions around it and things like that. And so hasn't gotten the full adoption. Internally, we use it quite a bit. I was just playing with it the other day of actually building a JSON schema to like actually create new bases or new tables. And it actually did pretty good at generating the schema that Airtable would need to create tables and fields. So there's definitely some use cases for it. But yeah, we'll talk more about that. We'll maybe showcase it. But it's basically, there's a couple different areas. Last season, we talked about they did already release AI inside the formula builder where you could use AI to build formulas. Now it's an actual field And so you see here, it's an actual field that can reference other fields. So you can kind of create a prompt and insert placeholders for other fields. And then it generates a button that you would click on to like create it. And if you modify any of the fields that are being referenced, it'll allow you to recreate it. So it does require manual input to generate the output. And then the output is static. You can't modify it. So it's kind of a read-only output. Mm-hmm. But then you can also use it in automations as well, where there's a step to insert AI functionality.
That's the part I think is I could see being most useful.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, because that output you could then put into a normal text field and then it would be editable. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
oh yeah, and it also, I think we showcased this before, where they help with like matching linked records to pull up the best results. Mm-hmm. So that's another AI feature. And then formula we already talked about. And then this is, I haven't used this one, content comment summary.
That's interesting.
Click the summarize button. Oh yeah, up here. So you can create a summary of your comments. So that requires using the comments. It looks like that's only in the interfaces.
I kind of like that. That's interesting. I do have a base that I use the comments a lot in, and then sometimes I need to like translate that into a long text field, like summarize the whole conversation. And
yeah,
I could see that being useful. I mean, it doesn't put it in the text field, but then you could just copy it, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Superhuman has a function like that for catching up on long email threads. And it's awesome. Like if you have a 20 email chain and you're like lost in it, you just click that, mm-hmm. you get your one sentence summary. It's really helpful. So I could imagine that being a great feature.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I could see that. So yeah. So that's kind of AI. Here we have Howie, the CEO of Airtable, talking about the launch and kind of what went into it. And so there's kind of his comments. We'll post this in there. I will show, I'll jump ahead a little bit since this is kind of on that topic. So if you remember, they acquired a company, Airplane, back in January, I believe. This is from somebody who worked at Airplane talking about that acquisition. And it's more, it is not the most pleasant read. It definitely shines some light on kind of the frustrations of being on the team that got acquired without knowing it. And but it did talk about AI being like the core driver. Some of the CTO who became the CEO of Airplane was excited about basically helping to implement AI within Airtable. And so anyways, this is a really interesting read if you want to learn about the acquisition that took place from the inside perspective. This person did not come over to Airtable. They didn't want to, but it allowed them to speak a little bit more freely. Didn't have to sign an NDA there. And so, yeah, kind of just talks about why they acquired it and kind of the frustrations of just letting the product just kind of die and shut it down so quickly, things like that. Yeah. But that's a good one. But yeah, the main reason is they wanted those developers to help with the AI at Airtable. So they may have been involved in some of this.
Yeah, that was an interesting read.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. More features. We're gonna dive deep into this one later in the show with Camille, but just announcing dynamic filtering.
Yay.
Finally.
I know. This has been on the want list since day one, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very exciting stuff.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is definitely exciting. I think there's like everything kind of room for improvement, but Camille will walk us through all the inside scoop on this. But yeah, this is one, it's probably been the longest requested item.
Absolutely. And
this is just the tweet about that new feature. Okay, here's another one. Pivot tables and interfaces came out while we were away. So anybody play with that yet?
Yeah, it's another thing that's been highly requested since interfaces were released, but it's great, but also a little disappointing. You can only put it on the new dashboard layout. So if you're still using the old legacy layouts, which in many cases I much prefer, you still can't use the pivot table. You can really only put it in one specific place. But it's great for what it is. If you're able to use the dashboard layout, if it gets you the data you need in the format you need it in, then it's really lovely to have that ability to use it. But I'd love the ability to have it in more than just that one place.
Yeah.
I kind of echo basically everything Ellie said. It's the pivot table itself is fine. It works pretty much the same way that the extension did, but it just, you can only put it on this one type of page. And for me, I really need it on detail pages, and you can't even put them on the newer upgraded detail pages. That it's really disappointing.
Yeah. I need charts and pivot tables. All the stuff you can do on the regular pages, you should be able to do in the detail pages.
I think. It's so weird that they're not, I don't know why you can only do certain things in certain places.
It's so odd. And like the list view, for example, I always go back to that. Like if you put it on this type of page, you have different options versus this type of page, you have different options. And it's like, why can't it just be the same set of controls across the board? Like, I don't understand. But hopefully they close that gap.
Yeah, I don't know what the technical hurdles are there. So in some limited capacity, there are pivot tables now. And there's the release on Twitter about it on X. Okay, let's look in through. There was a couple, on here that didn't get big write-ups on. Let's go back to the beginning. So email notifications for new form responses. Is this new?
Interesting.
I guess on the new form, they didn't have this yet.
I think what it used to be was whoever built it was able to turn on the notifications, but maybe now can control who it's sent to. Is that?
Can you click on that?
No responses, so it looks configurable.
Oh, I think this might be the alternative to in form views. Each person who wanted to be notified had to go to the form view themselves and then click, yes, I want to be notified. I think this is like a single input where anyone who has access to that page can insert just your own email address, but multiple others. So you don't have to individually each go to the page and click yes.
Gotcha. That's good. There's one. So European data residency. So your data can reside in a European data center. That's good for European clients.
Yep. I know that's held a lot of European clients back from really utilizing Airtable. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Does require enterprise scale. Okay. Here's another one. External collaborator visibility controls.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is, yeah, enterprise. Oh, and business as well.
Yeah, this one's great, but also a bummer they didn't roll it out to all teams. It's really, if you're one of the users using interfaces as like a semi portal for clients to look at, whether with read-only access or higher, then they previously had the ability to look at the share list. Like if they click the button to share, they would see all the other collaborators' email addresses. So kind of defeats the purpose of a portal because it's exposing that list to everybody else that has access to it. So now you can restrict that with business and enterprise, but hopefully they roll that out to the lower tier plans as well.
Yeah. So there's one. Let's see. Upgrade legacy record detail pages. You can now convert any old legacy recall to the new layout via the upgrade. Is that good? Are you going to do that? Are you sticking with the old?
I've been using the new. Sorry, go ahead, Camille.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've been using the new ones a lot more than I've been using the old ones, for sure. But the old ones still have the ability to do things like put charts on the detail page and other options that you don't have in the new one. So I don't really see this as being useful, but I guess.
Yeah.
It's really dependent for me on like what the use case is, because to Ali's point, you can't do, there's still not like feature parity, which makes sense. If you're making a new version, obviously the newer version is going to be the one that you're going to put all your effort into. However, there's still some stuff that you can't do there that you can do in the older layout. So it really depends on what I'm trying to build.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
There's a request from Alicia. I wish the detail page had collapsible sections.
That would be nice.
Yeah. They can't be collapsed. They could be hidden entirely, but that's sometimes not what you want.
Right.
Yeah. All right. A couple more. We already talked about pivot tables. Already talked about AI. Visibility rules for record detail buttons. So show or hide buttons in interface record detail page based on specific conditions for more intuitive and focused workflows.
I haven't seen that option, but I could really see that as being useful. Well, actually, maybe it's not. I rarely ever have a top light, like level button, like they're showing in this screenshot, like. But where I would really like it is to, you know, you can put a button on top of a list view in the detail page that allows the user to add a record. And I'd love to be able to shut that off if certain conditions are true, which I haven't seen as something that's possible, but I would love that if it is. I'm actually looking now to see.
Yeah, I was going to say I might test to see if this is only for top level buttons or is it for buttons on any of the groups that are on the page, because similar to Ali, normally the only button I would have in the very, very top might be a delete button, but everything else is probably at the group level. Mm-hmm. And
it's only on detail pages.
We are still talking about detail pages, but like detail pages have different like section groups, and I'm wondering if this functionality is only on the top level of button, or is it each group?
I think it's each. Well, I'm looking now. It's definitely the top level. I see it on the top level.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a group, there is visibility per group buttons. But if you're like my list view, though, where I've got the add record button, mm-hmm. no visibility options.
Oh, okay. I think that is like a different type of button, I guess.
Yeah, but that's where I would really need it.
Again, feature parity. My goodness.
Yeah. It's silly. Like, that's really where I would need it most is, you know, don't let them add a record if, like, the status is complete or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but still, yeah. Step in the right direction.
All right, last one here. Default field descriptions as interface helper text. So that looks like a little nice to have.
Yeah, finally. It was weird that wasn't the case from the start.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So that's their list. There's a couple more hidden ones that at least in the Built on Air community we found. So we'll highlight a couple more. Let's see. This is talking about the European. And then, this is one that wasn't necessarily mentioned there. They do have some project management features specific to project management, kind of some like starter templates, things like that. that are helpful. And then this was one from Josh in the Built on Air community talking about some filtering options that are new for dates. It looks like maybe this is just in certain scenarios. Familiar with this?
That does kind of satisfy somewhat of a date range, which is nice, you know, within this month. That's really nice.
Yeah, it looks like it's just on the grid view. So this is not available on interfaces.
Why?
Typical.
Oh, you mean the data layer?
Yeah.
Okay. I was like, it doesn't make sense for it to be just because the filter component is the same.
Right.
All. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just on the...
Why? I feel like I've seen this in an interface, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, we'll have to get Scott to chime in because he talks about how if you create a formula, you could do it somehow on an interface. And there's another thread here that goes into more detail.
Yeah, it's because you in the old filter elements and interfaces, you could have the same field show up more than once. So you could allow somebody to specify this date is, you know, on or after this date or on or before this date. But now the new filter dropdowns in the new dashboard layout and other places as well, you can only have each field show up once as a filter option.
So I misunderstood. I thought you guys were saying you could only select the option of this calendar week in the data layer, but not in the interface. Okay. So this is still a weakness in the filter. If you can't have the same field appear in the list of filter conditions twice.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe there is some confusion because that's what I kind of thought from the original post, but maybe Scott was referring to that other issue.
Right. Rewinding. I think what happened was, as Allie explained, in newer pages on interfaces, if you use dropdowns as the filter component, you can only have each field represented as a dropdown once. So that means for dates, if you wanted to do a date range, you're now limited to the predefined date ranges like this calendar week or this calendar month. But you couldn't engineer your own arbitrary one from February 1st to, you know, November 15th or something, because you wouldn't be able to have that same date field in there twice. And right. Scott's recommendation is to have your date field as normal and then another formula field that just is a copy of that date field. So you could have both the date and the formula appear as filters. So a hacky workaround, but that would satisfy the requirement.
Yeah. That makes sense. All right, moving on a few more. This is just kind of conversation on the pivot tables. So a lot of what we already talked about. And so we won't touch on that. This also we talked about in the list. So there's discussion on the external collaborator visibility controls. Little discussion there. Here was a new one. So you can now like change the shape of percents. And so you can now, I think before it was just bars.
It was a bar.
Now you can do a circle. Yeah.
That's cool.
Now you can do a circle and then it shows here, like if it's, you know, what percentage will be filled in.
There are many places where the circle looks silly because it's so small. But if you have it like, in linked record previews, for instance, they look really good. So, you know, just be aware that depending on where you are in the product, the circle is going to look very, very small.
Yeah. So nice little feature there. Okay. So this is past the feature, new features, just a couple good lessons. Meredith shares a story of accidentally deleting all the linked records that came from, if I remember correctly, so like if you delete all the records, um, the control what our customer sees. And then if you try to rely on the snapshots, it creates new records. So it makes it difficult to do the linking back up. So just being careful when you delete stuff.
Yeah, a snapshot will always assign new record IDs to the records.
Yeah.
What snapshots are doing is it's more or less duplicating your base. So the functionality under the hood is not different really than if you just explicitly wanted to duplicate your base, which would generate new Airtable record IDs, because it is a separate base. Once a snapshot is sort of created in the world of Airtable has no reason to treat that base any differently than any other base in your system. So ideally what it would do is when it creates a snapshot is to create a new field in each of the tables that is sort of a stamp of the original record ID. And then it generating its own new record IDs wouldn't matter. You would still want that because they are unique to the original. It is a copy of the original and therefore should have its own ID. But the problem is that the snapshots do not house the original record ID in any place.
Yep. Very good. Okay, a few more. Justin, another general tip. So this is interface buttons. If you're using them on mobile in particular, he was talking about his coworker was like just scrolling up and happened to be accidentally clicking the button that was triggering an automation. And just by trying to scroll, the button was just kind of where the thumb would go. And so just being careful with those, the sensitivity of buttons.
This is a problem in newer layouts because you cannot control where the buttons go. They are always, floated to the right. You can't float them to the left if you want it. So, one of the reasons why we would prefer more layout flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. A few more. This is just a shout out to Kavan, who's always great at writing very detailed, useful information. So if you want to better understand automation script limits, she wrote up a very thorough how automations work and what the limits are around scripts in automations. So that's a useful guideline. Okay, maybe we'll do this last one. I didn't hear about this, so this came from Table Forums. Somebody actually found it on LinkedIn, a potential data breach. And it may, if you keep reading, it may not have been as big of a deal. Julian points out here. Let's see if it comes up. So just talking about what the issue is, it may just be not understanding how shared views work. So the concern is, I don't know if you've ever seen a where you can actually see like a list of just random names as like collaborators.
Yeah.
And that might be because if you've ever like just done a shared view, like there's a lot of public bases out there that just have, and it'll show you anybody that's also downloaded or been added to that public base or view, and then those then show up on your list of potential collaborators. So I think that might be what the issue is.
Yeah, I saw this and I was like keeping an eye on it, and then Airtable did respond and said, no, it's just that list is anybody that you're a member of a base or several bases, and whoever else is also touching those bases is going to show up as an option in that dropdown.
So all right, let's move on. For time's sake, we'll save a couple other announcements for next week. So with that, quick shout out to Entourair, our primary sponsor. If you're relying on Airtable with important information, best practice is to make sure you've got it backed up outside of Airtable. That's where Entourair comes in. It's a backup solution. Check us out at Entourair. You can use Built on Air as a coupon code to get a discount. So check out Ontuware and start backing up your data. Make sure it's safe. All right, Jimmy, we'll learn a little bit about you and what you've got going on.
Cool.
Welcome to the podcast, Jimmy.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Of course. So, you know, normally we sort of pop into this is a podcast about all about Airtable. How did you come to find Airtable and what was the process like learning it?
I first found Airtable, I think it was in 2016. I was working for a marketing agency and Airtable was a customer. So that was how I first came across the product. But we were doing content marketing for Airtable, and in writing about it, obviously needed to learn the product. And at the time we were using Trello to manage all of our internal project management. And we quickly realized that Airtable would be a much, much better tool to do all of that. So actually, as we were onboarding Airtable, the customer, we were being onboarded to Airtable, the product, and ended up ripping out all of our project management stuff and replacing all of it with Airtable. So by the time like we got their marketing stuff up and running, we also got the product stuff going. And not to say that I was like an expert or anything at that point, but it gave me, it was really like my first opportunity to dip my toes into the world of no code. And as a non-technical person, I found that to be really, really cool. And I, throughout various jobs and now starting my own thing, have always relied on Airtable for like all kinds of things. Like in my current role, I probably use Airtable for, I don't know, 10 or 12 different use cases, each of which I don't even know what I would do otherwise other than pay a developer. Anyway, so that relationship goes back, gosh, I guess 7-8 years at this point.
2016. My goodness. Okay. So you've been in the game for a while now. So you've seen probably every major upgrade or enhancement Airtable has ever had. Yeah. Cause I don't know. I think 2016 might have myself and Allie beat Dan. I don't know if you're 2016 or earlier.
I think that beats me. Yeah.
I'm 2017.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Yeah, that's funny. I wrote a post on my personal blog, I think in 2016, about how I was using Airtable to run a content calendar. And it got a ton of traction, like a surprising amount of traction. I think because at the time, a lot of people were using Trello. I really like Trello, but the ability to take a view and then look at it in different ways was like kind of mind blowing at that time. And so there's lots of screenshots and, I think that was 2016. Cause I got an email from the folks at Airtable thanking me for writing it. Cause I just written it cause I thought it was cool. And they gave me some credits, which I used for a long time after that.
Mm-hmm. The golden days of early Airtable where they were giving away credits like candy.
Right.
So you came in, for Airtable, trying to do, you know, a marketing sort of approach, not really going looking for a replacement for the product you were currently using, Trello. And over time, Airtable kind of took over as your sort of main. But you also said that it was your first foray into the world of no code. What was it? How was your experience working with Airtable and also maybe dipping your toe into some other similar or related platforms?
Yeah. You know, I was working at this agency called Animals at the time. And around that same time, actually, Zapier became a customer as well. And so it was just like, we had to learn these tools anyway. Like we were going to learn them anyways. It just so happened that it was like this kind of burgeoning field of no code, which didn't really have a name yet. And there was, at the time, the company was pretty small. There were probably only 10 or 12 of us. And we would fight over who got to build new Airtable bases because all of us were creatives. Like we'd all come from a marketing background. We were writers, or we did SEO or something like that. And so, you know, it's like you got to spin up an Airtable base for a CRM. And we would argue over who would get the chance to do it. You know, or we got to like spin one up to like track, you know, employee time off or something like that. Same thing. We would fight about it. And then at the same time, we were starting to figure out how we could connect it to Zapier to do things like send email notifications to our customers when an article was done drafting or, you know, ready for them to review or, you know, whatever. We started building this sort of like customer life cycle of notifications built on Airtable and Zapier. And for me as someone who can't code, like I had spent like in jobs prior to that, like, you know, watching like WordPress tutorials and like really trying to like improve my own ability to like control things on the internet that like typically like people who can't code just are not able to control. So like for me to have insight into like, this is a database. Here's some things you could do with it. Here's some things you could build on top of it. That was like kind of mind blowing to me. Anyway, sorry, long-winded answer, but I'm really like, I'm not exaggerating when I say like completely changed the way that I think about work when I figured out that like I can do a lot of this stuff myself without learning to code.
That's so great. And it sounds like it was also a little bit the case for your colleagues as well, if everyone's fighting over who gets to,
yeah,
you know, put on the engineer hat for the day and connect everything together. What's it kind of like? Normally, in my experience, we'll have like a team of people who are all trying to do one thing, produce a marketing campaign, for instance. And then you'll have one person on the team who's really gung-ho about, here's this new tool that we could use to improve our workflow. It's not my experience to be on a team where if we're a team of five, all five are like, no, I want to build the thing with the new tool. So how do you pick the person who gets to be that person? Because you do, ideally, you want someone who's maybe more familiar with the product because they could, you know, maybe build it a little bit more stably. But if everyone's having fun, what do? Do you just go off?
For a little while, it was okay. You know, the company was small enough that like we could share some of the fun of getting to build Airtable bases. Over time, though, the complexity increased to the point where we really did have to have an admin. Like somebody had to be in charge of this stuff, particularly when at one point we decided that we would put all of our workflow, all of our marketing workflow stuff in one table, and then all our employee stuff in another table within the same base so that we could link records back and forth. And then that turned into, well, if we're going to have all the employees in this table anyways, like let's use that to manage time off. We'll have fields for like performance reviews and one-on-ones. And at that point, it's like it starts to collect like sensitive information about folks on the team. It's also, you know, we're trying to build this customer facing part of it so that we can give customers dashboard views and things like that. That was really when we had to hand it off to somebody who was actually the person we ended up handing off to, interestingly enough, was a developer who had experience managing stuff like this. And so at that point, we'd set up an Airtable base where you could like submit requests of stuff you wanted to be built into it. And then actually later on, that same developer built like a simple but pretty powerful layer on top of it so that we could make really powerful dashboard views for clients. This is way before interfaces existed, so we had to build some of that stuff from scratch. But that person became like, at the time, this is like 2017, 2018. Like, I can't imagine there were too many people in the world doing more sophisticated stuff with Airtable than he was. Like, we were managing hundreds and hundreds of projects in there. At one point, the company was over 100 employees too. So you can imagine like just the amount of data, literally all living in one Airtable base. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, that company is still using that same Airtable base today.
I commend the developer and your team for putting it all in a single database, because you see a lot of like sprawled systems where some stuff over here and some stuff's over here. And we're still talking about 2018, 2019 in terms of like timeline. So this would have also been before synced databases as well. And it's just always interesting for me thinking back to how would I do this if I didn't have this feature that was released relatively recently in the life cycle of Airtable. So totally. That's how you got to you are familiar with the platform. You've now expanded into other use cases that necessitate more connectivity. Enter Zapier. How have you been integrating Zapier with your, you know, all of the different things that you are now at your disposal?
That's a good question. I use Zapier for a few things, mostly customer facing stuff. I send a lot of notification emails through Zapier. That's, I don't know, that's not like my main use case, but like when I look at my tasks that I pay for each month, like that eats up quite a bit of the usage of the product. Gosh, I'm trying to think. I have just recently started moving over to Airtable automations for anything that's not customer facing whenever I can, because I just find it's just simpler to, like, if I'm trying to create an automation within one Airtable base, it's just easier to create the automations in Airtable than have to remember they're over in Zapier and what folder are they in. And if I move this record, is something going to happen that I forgot about, kind of thing. So I've been migrating some of that stuff back to Airtable actually. If you look at, like, if you look at my Zapier billing though, 75% of it is forwarding emails through aliases that we create for this app that I'll show you all in a few minutes. And that's, in a way, it's sort of an extension of like email notifications for customers. But I think at its core, really, like, we've built an entire self-serve, fully functioning app that people use every day that is completely hands-off from me. And to me, that's like just like the next level. Like, to do like project management and stuff like that, like, that's cool, you know, it's helpful. But like, to be able to build apps that people can use and actually pay for, like, that is super cool. And so, like, that's where, when I bring Airtable and Zapier together, it becomes, for me at least, really exciting that I can be building software essentially that people can use. And again, don't have to learn to write the code, or in my case, pay someone, which would be probably prohibitively expensive.
And with that, I think we'll transition into a demo. I will point out that your lower third says SuperPath and your sweatshirt says SuperPath.
There we go. Yeah. Actually, my coffee mug says SuperPath too. I'm all about swag.
From the world of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jim, if you want to share your screen, get that ready.
For sure. So what I was going to show is an app that we run called Help a B2B Writer. Sorry, give me one sec. I'll share this. Let's see. Can you all see that now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. We run two marketplaces. I'll show one of them today. The first is a content marketplace. It is essentially a fancy Kanban board with some automations built around it. We're in the process of building out a proper application on top of Softr, which is the no-code tool that I have come to know and like. So pretty soon our customers are going to have logins. They'll be able to do a couple simple actions in the app. The other one that we run is essentially a subject matter expertise marketplace. So if you're familiar with Help a Reporter Out, it's basically the same thing, except specifically for B2B content marketers. And so the premise of it is that, say you're a writer and you want sources for something you're writing, you can come on here and submit a request. The request submission stuff is literally just an Airtable form. And the idea of it is you would say, you know, I'm writing an article on the best, you know, what are the five best apps for people ops managers? You know, I'm looking for HR folks to weigh in. And then every day we process those requests and we send out what we call a daily wire. So anyone who is subscribed to the people ops category would get that email, and then they have the opportunity to respond. The writer can use those responses or not. And then the idea is that, you might get mentioned in the article or get a link back to your site. So the process, which I'll walk through, is pretty straightforward at first. So, you know, the writer fills out this form, which asks a bunch of basic information about, like, what are you writing about? What's your site's domain authority? What's your request? Like, what do you want back from people? You can select the categories that are relevant to the request. You can select multiple, and that will help it reach more people. If you drop a Twitter handle, we'll share it on Twitter too, and then your deadline. All of this stuff goes into this giant Airtable base. which has, there's like almost 6,000 requests in here right now. We actually acquired this site, and I should give credit to the woman we acquired it from. Her name is Elise Dobson. She built all of this. We've refined it over the year and a half that Superpath has owned it, but the bones of it were all here. And so the first part of this Airtable base is essentially just the information that's collected through that form. And then there's a couple other things that happen in here, which I think are kind of cool. When we approve a request, like we do a quick check to make sure there's no spam or, you know, anything that we don't want going out to the list, because these requests do reach like 4,000 people every day. There's an approved button that powers a quick automation, which just formats the request for our newsletter. So this is kind of the raw intake here. Once the approve button is clicked, an automation is run that turns it into this nicely formatted copy, which we literally just copy and paste that into the emails that we send. And we use ConvertKit for that part. So every morning, myself or my VA goes into ConvertKit, opens up a new email, copies and pastes this, sends it to the people subscribed to these tags, which are all synced with ConvertKit, and then sends those emails out. And there's probably 10 to 15 of these that go out every morning. The more interesting stuff happens over here. So there's a few things that happen. One is that there is a softer website synced with this Airtable base, which is this one. So if you don't subscribe to the emails, you can just go into here and you can just browse stuff that's come in. Some people like this because there's just a lot happening and they don't want to get 10 or 15 emails every day. So you can always just go into here, read the request, and then decide if you want to respond. And then if you want to respond, this is the email alias that you would send to. I'll explain that part in a second. And then we run the Slack community, and we run all of these through here too. So every morning, this same digest, here you go. This is a good example right here. Every morning, this kind of digest or wire of requests ends up in the Slack community as well. And these are just links to that softer website. My goal is just to get these in front of as many people as I possibly can, because that just makes a better experience for the writers. They get more responses, et cetera, et cetera. When we first acquired the site, it was kind of interesting because a request would be sent out, and then in order for anyone to respond, and the people responding are like folks who work in digital PR, occasionally ghostwriters for subject matter experts, it's SEO folks, it's some people who are just like, you know, are intelligent about a topic and want to contribute. But the writer's email was exposed in the wires that were sent out, and we didn't have a better way to do that. So we used Airtable to come up with a much, much better way to do this. And basically what we did is that we created an inbox, reply@helpabtbwriter.com, and then we used just a simple concatenation formula to create this little email alias. So it's just reply plus the record ID at helpabtbwriter.com. That is what now ends up in every email. And I have a zap set up so that whenever people send an email to that alias, it comes to us. We can run filters on it if we want to, like we have in the past tried like AI detection filters and things like that, which I found don't work particularly well, but we have options to do that. We also have like a rating system so that as stuff comes in, people can rate it as good or bad, things like that. But anyways, it comes in. We use Zapier for this part. We do a lookup. It will reference that record ID, find the actual email address, and then it will forward it on. That's just been like a total game changer for us, because now we have insight into all of the responses that come in every month. And there's about 5,000 of them that we process every month. It gives us the ability, like I said, to, you know, implement a rating system, run filters, and a few other things. But it also is a privacy feature for our users. No one has to have their personal email address exposed to 4,000 people anymore. And actually the usage of the app increased significantly once we did that, because we found that a lot of people wanted to use it, but they just really didn't want their email, personal email address being sent out to all these people. So that's been awesome. And I can show you just quickly what those actually look like. So this is what the daily, an example of a wire email looks like. So this would be sent to anyone subscribed to these categories. This part is from us. So there's this is a templated email that gets sent out. So because since we're forwarding on and passing through the alias to the actual individual, we control the email notification they get. So we can have an intro here. We've actually updated this recently to have a little bit more context for folks. This part is the actual wire. If you want to respond, you click here, and this is the alias, so that no personal information exposed, it'll get forwarded to the right person. And then someone could, like I said, they could get, depending on which categories they're subscribed to, could get a few of these. And then that writer will get a bunch of responses. And it's kind of the same thing. Like, we control this part of the email. This is the customized part, which is pulled directly out of the Airtable base. And then here's the rating. So you can rate as thumbs up or thumbs down. That just helps us weed out, like, every now and then you get somebody who's doing some kind of like spammy link building thing. And we like to flag those as quickly as possible and get those users on a blacklist so they don't send lots of, you know, spammy, annoying emails to our users. So anyways, that's a quick overview. We process 500 to 600 requests from writers every month, and we process about 5,000 responses every month. So the fact that we can do all of this, and all I really have to do, or my VA has to do, depending on the day, is just go in and just click the approve button just to make sure that we're not sending something we don't want to send to a bunch of people. We don't have to do anything else. And we're also just in the early stages of monetizing this as well. So we've had a few companies who want to sponsor these emails, because at this point, there's so many emails going out. It's become an attractive sponsorship opportunity. And we are toying with the idea of rolling out a paid plan for primarily for folks in digital PR who would send, you know, more than 5 or so responses a month, and they would get some additional functionality, including what we're calling API access. We actually have one customer doing this right now. It's not technically API access, but that's sort of how I think about it. Like, they have access to a view from this Airtable base, and they get some additional functionality out of it. Like, for example, they get instant access to new requests, so they could get a jump start on it. They also get a verified sender status. So they have their own alias so that we can track their email separately, and we can also control the notifications differently. So whenever they send a response, the recipient can see that it's sent from a quote unquote verified responder, which is pretty important, because, you know, 500 requests and 5,000 responses a month, like, an individual writer could get a lot of responses. It's very difficult sometimes to weed through those. So we're trying to find some ways to elevate folks who, like, we know are trustworthy, we know send good responses. And so the verified sender status is part of that. So anyways, a lot of information all at once. Hopefully that's helpful. Any questions about any of that?
It was really cool. And I like the use case of using the ID of the record in an alias for an email. I had never actually thought of doing that, but that is very clever. And yeah, it allows you to control so much on the back end.
For sure. That it took me a while to figure that out. And this is the Zap that we use, if you want to see it. I messed around with this for many hours trying to figure out a way to do it. And I was messing around with some other SaaS products that will allow you to create aliases, but I just couldn't get any of them to work the way I wanted them to work. And after a lot of tinkering and hanging out in the Airtable community, looking for folks, and asking questions and stuff, we finally came up with this. And the only downside of it is that it just crushes our Zapier tasks. But other than that, it's good.
And it's probably, you probably only have to pay for one Gmail account to support that, right? It's
just Exactly.
Yeah, awesome.
Helping me do it. So that costs us, you know, like $12 or $15 a month or whatever.
Very cool. That's very, very clever.
Have you hit record limits yet?
I come within, you know, like 1 or 2% every month. Like, I think we're on the 20,000. Oh, sorry, you're talking about Airtable records. No, yeah, I haven't yet. I mean, we pay for this. So we said we have 5,800. I don't know how many you get in a paid plan, but no, we haven't luckily come across that part yet.
Gotcha. As you get more popular, yeah, that'll be something you might be hitting.
Yeah, yeah. I'll consider that a good problem if we fill it up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. So people can find this where? What's the website?
Helpabtobwriter.com. So this is the website. You can register as a writer, which basically means you submit requests, or if you want to respond to requests, you can register as a source. And that just signs you up for the emails, and then you can select the categories after this form.
And then Superpath is, are you an agency as well writing content, or what's your main business?
Just a marketplace. So we run a community of about 20,000 content marketers. And for companies who need content marketers, we will source and vet writers for you. All of that actually happens on Airtable also. And you get access to our cool, or you will very soon get access to our simple but cool app built on software and Airtable. But the gist of it basically is work with freelancers without any of the headaches. So we find the people, we vet them, we pay them, we deal with their taxes, contracts, all that stuff. And you just get to work directly with great content marketers.
Awesome. Cool. So check it out, superpath.co. And Jimmy, thank you for showcasing that. It's awesome to see real world businesses built on Airtable.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. With that, a quick shout out. If you are not in our community, join us, builtonair.com/join, gets you into our Slack community of thousands of Airtable users. We'd love to have you in there, and also come join us on the show, showcase what you are working on with Airtable. And with that, let's dive into some new features of dynamic filtering. Camille. There you go.
Okay. Am I sharing?
Yep.
Great. So I highly recommend looking at the help article for dynamic filtering for linked records, because there are some nuances in terms of what counts and what you can actually look or compare between. But I'm going to do my best to do a high level overview of what this new feature is. So looking at a linked record relationship between my applicants and my positions table, I have a bunch of other fields that I'm going to test against for the dynamic filtering of it all. But if I were to edit this field, the existing option that we've had access to for a while was limit record selection to a view. That meant if I wanted everyone in this table to only be allowed to link to, say, positions that are on the West Coast, I would create a view where the position, or I'm sorry, the region was West Coast. And then I'd go back here and say, limit selection to a view, that one, and then be good. So I should only have one selectable, but that's the same for all of them. And that's not necessarily what I want to do, because I want, in this scenario, I want to match people who are on the West Coast to positions that are on the West Coast. And you'll see I have two different fields that show West Coast versus East Coast. Reason being is there's some limitations. So if we start, I'm going to ignore AI and start with filter record selection by a condition. And then this help icon will take you directly to that help article I was showing before. So for starters, you can have a condition or condition group, which is great. I'll go simple with a condition and start with region. So what I want to do is select records in positions where the region is either West Coast or East Coast. If I do this, I'm going to run into the same problem as view, because this is saying for all of the records, only do West Coast. Instead, I want dynamic. But here's my first problem. Select types are not compatible with this feature yet. So neither single select or multi-select would you be able to have dynamic. For static conditions, those are fine. Same way you would have a condition applied to a lookup or a rollup or a count. This works the same, but you wouldn't be able to do a dynamic condition, which is why I have region two. In both this table and in the positions table, region two is a linked record. So again, I can have a static selection here, or I'm now able to select dynamic condition by hitting that gear icon. So now what it's asking me is, say, choose a field from this table, applicants that should match the region two field in positions. So I'm going to say region two. So now if we look at region two here, I should see only applicants that are on only positions that are on the West Coast here, but this is East Coast, so I should see a different one. And I do. This should again say lead mascot, right? So that is how dynamic selection works. I'm going to clear these out and go back to my settings. What are the other field types that you could use? So text works, numbers work, linked records work, single select and multi-select do not work. User fields work, but I have noticed something's like specific about it. That's something to keep in mind. User fields have a toggle for allowing multiple users to be selected. And in this case, in this field, this is selected off. So if I were to try and have my condition dynamically based on the user field, I wouldn't be able to select this one because their settings don't match. If I go back and say this one allow multiple, or if I go to the other one and have it not be allow multiple, so making them the same, either or, now I should be able to select user, dynamic, and then the user field. So as long as the user field matches its settings and conditions, we're fine. But you can't do a multi-select user to a single select user, which is annoying. If you are familiar with dynamic filtering in the context of interfaces, you can compare a user field or the currently logged in user's email against an email field. That does not work here. So if I go back to user, you notice it's not going to let me select my email field here. So this might be expected behavior, but I just wanted to call that out because in interfaces, you could use either a user field or an email field to have like dynamic filtering available. And here it's type to type.
What about, I didn't hear you mention formula. Do formula fields work?
Kinda. So what do I have? I'm going to create a formula field that is just going to be name. And then if I go back here and do formula, you can't have it as a dynamic. So I misspoke. I thought I could compare a formula, but only against a regular text field. It turns out dynamic conditions for formulas are just off entirely. But you could still have a static condition.
So I assume rollups and lookups also not supported.
Lookups are.
Yeah. So the all of the fields that are compatible and not compatible are listed in this table. And not this table, this help article. I think you just gotta read through it because there's more than what I've said in the demo that are like intricacies. The user field was one of the examples where although it looks like the same on the outside because it doesn't change it's still called a user field if you were to select from the dropdown. They are technically different fields. You could see like the icon changes, and for whatever reason, Airtable didn't have multiple user as a selectable dropdown. So there's just really specific things that you're going to run into when you use this feature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, until they have select fields and formula fields, I could see this being frustrating.
I was expecting select fields to be there, but yeah, I don't know. I just don't know.
I mean, at the same time, like it would be a nice to have, but I also kind of see the logic where if you have the same select field, like with the same options on two different tables, like that could or should just be your linked record field anyways. So you're ensuring you actually have the same values to compare.
That is true. And I will say, I would of the two between select and linked records, I would rather linked records work, and they do. So, you know, if you have the ability to convert whatever multi-select or single select field into a linked record, then you would be able to make use of this feature.
Mm-hmm. Dates supported?
Maybe. Let's try. I know we're over. Date. Nope. Allie, did you say no? Not working?
Yeah, not for me.
Dang it.
It would be. I mean, this is another case where like having date range options too would be nice. You can say, you know, if the date of this record is within a time frame defined on another table or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
So it is a pretty, it is a subset, a true subset of all of their fields that it's compatible for. And it's always going to be type to type. So user field works, linked record works, plain text works, numbers works. Dates do not, single and multi-select do not.
Yeah.
And formulas do not either.
Very cool. That is useful. I think, if it fits the right use case. I also assume if you map something and you select something, but and then you change the filters to where that no longer would have matched, it still keeps it there as the selected option.
Yeah, it should not unlink. So if I turn this off and hit save, these are still linked together.
So it's just for future selection.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Awesome. That is cool to see that in real life and start playing with it. Let us know your feedback. And with that, we'll end today's show and we'll be back next week. Want to thank everyone. Jimmy, thanks for coming on.
Thank you guys.
Seeing what you've got in the future, and we'll see everybody next week. Take care.
Bye.
Take care.
Thank you for joining today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out our sponsor, Ontoware Backups, automated backups for Airtable. We'll see you next time on the Built on Air podcast.